Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
With the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track, and we're your weekly source for performance information. If you have any questions, comments, smart remarks, or if you have a topic you'd like us to look into, let us know. You can get to us at crushperformance.com. Info at crushperformance is the email. You can follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush and on Facebook, Instagram, and on YouTube. Check out Crush Performance. That's Crush with a K. We work to answer every single message that we get. And if we like your idea or your question, we may dedicate a segment of the show or an entire episode to your idea. So please do get to us. And that's what today's show is all about. A couple great shows recently and a lot of questions coming out of them. So I wanted to get to the Crush mailbag right off the bat. Today we're going to go back and look at some of the questions that we've gotten over the last little while. And a couple weeks ago, we did an episode called Drunken Stone, the impact and effects of alcohol and drugs on performance and development. And it raised some eyebrows and actually stirred up some really, really good questions. And one of the topics we were focusing on was the fact that CBD oil is now removed from the World Anti-Doping Agency's banned substance list in sport. As of 2018, it's off the list, and a lot of people are now wondering, hey, is it safe? What exactly does it do for the athlete? And how is it going to be used inside of sport? Today, we're going to follow up on that conversation and get some clarity on that particular issue as we talk with Rob Keeler, the Deputy Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency. We'll ask him about the process for a substance to be removed from the list, what has to happen, and what process does it go through in order to be cleared for use in sport. And we're also going to talk to him about alcohol. Alcohol is officially off the banned substance list. Believe it or not, it was still on for a number of sports, but now the World Anti-Doping Agency is saying, okay, federation by federation, you can deal with the issues of alcohol in your sport. Race car driving, probably equestrian, a few other ones I believe it was still on the list for, but it's off now. So we're going to talk about that. And we're also going to ask him about the issues of the legalization of pot. Are they concerned? What are the implications in sport? And then how are we going to regulate the CBD and the CBD oil to make sure that it's pure, that there's no THC or the psychoactive component to pot and marijuana? Because that part of it is still banned. And we're going to have to be very, very careful that those two don't cross. They don't come in with cross-contamination, or how do you guarantee the purity of CBD oil? A lot of questions still revolving around this whole legalization, and certainly there are implications in sport that our athletes are going to have to be aware of. I do believe, listen to me carefully, athletes out there, if you're in a sport where there is testing and your future scholarships or participation at a national level or in a professional team are riding on being clean, you had better be careful when it comes to the CBD oil, because in our initial investigations, there's not a lot of regulation going on, just like the rest of the supplement world. So we'll be continuing to look at that, but we're going to ask Rob Keeler about that, the Deputy Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency, coming up in the next segment. And then later in the show, I want to get to some questions that have come to us, not from the radio show, believe it or not, but questions that came from a recent presentation I did for the Mission Sport Council. All the sport leaders in that community got together along with some of the parents and coaches, and they invited me out to talk sport, sport performance, long-term development, and all the issues revolving around developmental sport and some of the thoughts and ideas that we now have in how we can maximize performance cultures, and also some of the issues we need to think about in the big picture. It was a fantastic presentation. Now, again, I have to apologize to everybody who came out to that meeting. It was supposed to be 90 minutes, and we actually hit the three-hour mark, and we could have kept going. I want to thank everybody for hanging in there. It was a great discussion. And there was also some really, really strong points brought up, but it was a real interactive presentation. We've had some questions that have come to our mailbox from people who were at that presentation. And I want to get to some of those questions because they're really, really thoughtful and insightful. And frankly, some of the questions have me thinking about things. So I want to get to that later in the show. The presentation was called Keys to Success in Sports. Yes, sports with an S, plural, because that was one of the main components of the conversation, the idea of specialization versus sampling multiple sports in the developmental ages. It is so, so critical that we expose our young people to as many sports as possible in the developmental ages, which is getting harder and harder to do, and it's one of the major issues in sport. There was an article in Time Magazine recently titled, How Kids Sports Became a $15 Billion Industry, and it's one of the main reasons our sports systems are now failing. It is a big, big business, developmental sport, and frankly, it's not great for development, or at least it hasn't been under the current guidelines and structures. So we talk about that later in the show. And then last week, we had an episode looking at the next greatest areas of potential for human performance. And I believe they lie within our understanding of the mind and the technology that's going to help push performance forward. Listen, when it comes to the physical side of sport development, when it comes to the acquisition of skill and talent, the technical, tactical side, we've got that pretty much down. We're pretty much at a ceiling there. We're always going to maybe push it a little bit as we learn more. But the two areas that I believe have the greatest potential for pushing human performance forward are the mind and technology. And in that episode, we spoke with Jason Sherwin from DeServo about their new technology that's really impacting the game of baseball. They're now reaching out to hockey and football, and there's a lot of implications for this new science that's allowing us to train the brain, see what the brain is doing, and then train it real time so athletes can get a better understanding of what's going on and how they can actually control it. It is untapped potential. Listen, when this technology really gets to where it needs to be and we understand truly how to use it, all hell is going to break loose when it comes to human performance. I promise you that. We're watching this so close as the technology is advancing and the techniques and our understanding is becoming more refined on how we can actually train and impact human performance. We want to be first, frankly, and not first on the technology side. There's great companies doing that for us, but we want to match that technology with our training principles and with biochemistry and what we know about biochemistry. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, we are heading to some really, really fun times when it comes to human performance. So we'll keep you updated on that. But of all of that great show that we had last week, one of the comments that we're getting a lot of feedback on is a comment I made about a presentation that I recently did for a construction company. Yes, the questions are, Jeff, I thought you were a sports guy. What are you doing talking to a construction company? And Jeff, what does a sports guy talk to a construction company about? And Crusher, what are you doing talking to a construction company? And who are you talking to? Well, it was a great, great presentation. I was really happy to be asked to come out and talk to the good people at E-Construction, one of the world's biggest road paving and road construction companies. They wanted to talk about workplace performance and strategies for helping their people not just be healthier and perform well on the job, but with the massive outcome, just like we are focusing on in sports, keeping them safe and injury free. Listen, I have worked 12-hour shifts. I've worked in the mills and I've grew up on the farm. I've worked in a dairy farm. I know what manual labor is about. And I also know what those long shifts can do to you. And with all that we know in terms of human performance in sport, and that's where a lot of the research comes from, the parallels between the workplace and what we're doing with our teams in sport are running almost an exact parallel. Just think about it. Any company that has employees, and I don't care what the service or the sector is, anywhere people are trying to perform and I guess work towards an outcome, there are performance factors that you can influence. And when you really break it down and look at the overall picture, fundamentals, fundamentals, fundamentals. So this conversation that we had and the presentation that I did for this construction company was based on, okay, what can you do to help yourself perform better on a daily basis? And honest to goodness, it was the workers in the trenches, it was the office people, it was the administrative guys and the corporate leaders. They were all there and it applies to everybody. The cool thing is we can take what we know in sport and tie it into how a company and the people in that company can influence their performance individually. Look, when we look at the studies done on human performance and successful cultures and organizations, there is one common denominator, regardless of whether we're talking about academics, sports teams, whether we're talking about businesses, there's a common denominator when you look at winning cultures. Of course, that culture has to be there. A real positive corporate and functional performance culture and environment has to be there. If it doesn't have that, you can't be successful. But in the companies and teams and organizations that are successful, the one common denominator that every leader attributes their success to is not technology, it's not resources, funding, or money. It is the people. People, people, people. And frankly, human physiology doesn't change based on what you're doing on a daily basis or where you live or what country. Human physiology is pretty standard. And if you apply the principles of human physiology to yourself every single day, listen, you can perform better. You can feel better. You can live longer. You can be healthier. And listen to me, most importantly, maybe for everybody, especially in our world in sport, you can maximize your potential and your performance, and you can substantially reduce your risk of injury and health-related issues. And that's what the conversation was all about. It just happened to have sports overtones, which I think, even for some of the people who weren't sports fans, they could relate to. And believe it or not, we had a bunch of emails and questions about that out of that incredible show that we had last week. And again, I really do appreciate those questions because, yeah, heck, when I was asked to come out and speak to this company, I'm going, okay, I know exactly what I want to do. I've spoken to oil companies. We've spoken to bank managers. We've spoken to a number of groups, weed controllers, and it's all just about human performance. So I want to thank those guys for coming out. And that's what that's all about. As if I was talking to a football team or one of our baseball teams or with the players in a hockey agency, it doesn't matter. The group is the same and the principles are the same. So it's a fantastic discussion. And yes, there's no doubt about it. Anywhere you're trying to achieve and perform, these principles apply. So much fun. Okay, let's get out for a quick break. When we come back, we're going back into the mailbag to answer some questions from our episode, Drunken Stone, the impact and effects of alcohol and drugs on performance and development. We're going to look at some of the questions revolving around CBD coming off of the banned substance list for the World Anti-Doping Agency as we talk with the Deputy Director General of WADA right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around, everybody. Crush Performance, we're your weekly source for performance information. Join me, Jeff Kreshel, and the Con Man as we dig deep into the science and research of talent development and skill acquisition to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. And go to our website, crushperformance.com, to get details on my brand new book, The Performance Plan, strategies for top performance in sport, business, coaching, and life. Our goal is to help you get better, and it starts with The Performance Plan. Get control, get focused, and get results. We're Crush Performance. Join us weekly right here on Radio Influence.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Listen, if you do want to get in touch with us, crushperformance.com is the website. Info at Crush Performance is the email, and you could follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush, on Facebook, on Instagram, and on YouTube. Go to Crush Performance. Those social media platforms are a lot of fun, and we're getting better at them. It's a practiced art form, no question about it, but it's coming along for sure. And again, we're just spreading the good word. Today's show, we're going back to an episode we had a few weeks ago called Drunken Stone, the impact of alcohol and drugs on performance and development. And the episode was originally supposed to be about exactly that. How does it impact human performance? But it took an interesting twist with our guest, Rebecca Hines-Saw, assistant professor of the Department of Community Health Sciences at the U of C, where we started looking at the social implications. What are the things we need to think about in the big picture? Look, I've always said sport is such a powerful tool in our society. It's a great way to send messages. It's a great way to teach and learn. It's also a great way to socialize and build community as well. So while we originally set out to look at the implications on human performance in sport, it turned into this really cool conversation about the power of sport, how it can influence young people and its impact on society. But we were able to talk about the impact on human performance. When it comes to pot, there were two active components we talked about, the tetrahydrocannabinol, the THC, which is the most abundant cannabinoid in the plant. And it's that compound that causes that euphoria after you use it. And that's why a lot of the recreational use is going to be so popular. But we also talked about CBD, cannabidiol, the other active ingredient in the plant. And we've only recently really begun to appreciate the properties of CBD and CBD oil. It has anti-seizure properties associated to pain relief. It's been used in certain cancer treatments. It has implications in diabetes. It helps protect the nerves, anti-anxiety. And for our athletes, there's strong evidence that it has anti-inflammatory properties. And maybe even more so in our conversation in that episode, we talked about how CBD oil is now off the World Anti-Doping Banned Substance list here in 2018. And that raised some eyebrows with our listeners and resulted in some text messages and some emails inquiring about CBD oil in sport and how it's going to be used. Is it safe? Is it approved? What are the properties? How do you use it? Well, a lot of interesting questions, but I think to get to the root of it, it was on the banned substance list because, well, frankly, we weren't sure what the implications were, and I'm not sure it's perfectly clear right now in the big picture. But for the World Anti-Doping Agency, it's gone through the process, and it's also passed with flying colors in terms of its applications in sport. To get a better idea of what that process looks like and what we're looking at when it comes to CBD oil and alcohol, we reached out to the World Anti-Doping Agency to get some more information, and it was a fantastic conversation. So fantastic, in fact, that I wanted to bring it to the airwaves and to our listeners. So we are joined right now by Rob Keeler, the Deputy Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency. Rob, thanks for joining us today.
That's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, a very interesting time in sport, and we've been saying this more often than not, it seems, over the last little while. Just wanted to touch base with you on the new banned substance list that's come out for 2018, a few revisions there. Maybe we could just talk to our audience, Rob, about the whole process of modifying the banned substance list and what dictates whether something is on or off the list.
Sure. I think it's pretty important to understand that it's not the WADA list, it's the World Anti-Doping list, and it's a list that's really developed in consultation with stakeholders. The process itself takes almost 9 months. Every year in January, our list committee sits down and reviews any potential feedback they receive from our stakeholders. And over that 9 months, there's discussions and consultation with stakeholders, which then comes to the executive committee meeting in September, where they will look at the proposed changes that has been provided from the expert group to the Health, Medical, and Research Committee, then to the executive committee for an approval of a list that is published on October 1st and then comes into force the next year in January. In order for something to make it on the list, it has to meet two of three criteria. One, it has to be a potential for it to enhance performance. Two is a health risk to athletes, and the third is violate the spirit of sport. So if a substance meets those two criteria, then it can find its way on the list.
Yeah, and I guess there's a number of those out there, especially in today's world. Well, one of the interesting, I think, points that we're sort of focusing on here, Rob, right now, is some of the concerns that we're having over the legalization of marijuana here in Canada, in certain parts of the world as well. This opens up a whole, I guess, maybe paradox of potential issues for athletes out there as we try to get an understanding of this new legislation. Does the World Anti-Doping Agency have any forethought on this? Have you guys been sort of thinking about what this might mean for sport as a whole?
Well, I mean, it's not the first country. I know Canada, as we were going through the potential legalization of marijuana, we have other countries in the world that have legalized. And that's where the process is in place. Every year, the consultation is with stakeholders to determine whether something is on the list. Because it's legalized in a country, doesn't mean it comes off the list. Again, we follow the two of the three criteria. If it meets those two or three criteria, then it fulfills the requirements to be on the prohibited list. So we really don't take that into consideration when it comes to legalized or not legalized. It's more for the athlete's well-being and making sure that we are leveling the playing field.
Yeah, and that is a big responsibility in today's landscape. And, you know, with all the issues we're seeing, Rob, it's been really interesting to watch the professional sports sort of now spearhead some of the initiatives in terms of testing and banned substances and even just raising awareness, and Major League Baseball being one of those. That's got to be a major influence on the sporting world, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, we've worked with Major League Baseball for a very long time. We have a very good relationship with them. We've guided them as they went through the series of commissions that they had to go through, and they made the significant changes. And I think Major League Baseball is one of the leagues in the professional in the North America that is really leading the way in terms of tougher sanctions, enhanced testing. They use a lot of investigations to target their tests, and they take it seriously. And for that, we obviously would like to see them one day potentially make it further to the World Anti-Doping Code. But what they have now is a pretty significant program.
Yeah, and I know for the young baseball players out there, as I travel around and work with some organizations, it's really raised the awareness, good and bad, of course. The negative publicity is never good for the league, of course, but I think it's a tool in raising awareness. We're talking with Rob Keeler, the Deputy Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency. Rob, the new banned substance list, as we mentioned, has come out, and it's quite a process, as you mentioned, to see what goes on the list, what comes off the list, and something did come off the list in relationship to the cannabis and the marijuana. It's the CBD oil. It was removed from the banned substance list. What is the process for something like the CBD oil being on and then off? Is there a time? Is there a trial or a period that you guys need just to analyze what the implications might be, or how did it work with the CBD oil?
I mean, that's the beauty of the process that we have in place, that we're always constantly reviewing and assessing the different substances are on there. And when it came to the CBD, it was clear that it's not a cannabimetic substance and therefore didn't fill the two of the three criteria to be on the list. And that's the reason it was removed. Again, we're in a changing environment. Everything can come off or anything can come on. And that's one substance that found its way off in the 2018 list.
Yeah. And another thing I thought was interesting was the removal of alcohol. And some people are saying, hey, man, we didn't even know alcohol was on the list, but it was under certain circumstances. Now it's officially off. I'm just wondering what the thinking was there, or what the process was in terms of actually one having it on the list for certain sports and then coming off. Obviously, there's no advantage in sport. We know that.
I mean, the history behind that, before WADA, the International Olympic Committee, was the one that managed and oversaw the list. And with that, in 2004, alcohol was prohibited. What's happened over time, and once WADA took over the list and regulating it with its stakeholders, it became a sport-specific one. And it was more for the health and safety in terms of different sports. Obviously, it did meet two of the three criteria at the time. But now it's given the ease of being able to detect through breathalyzer at events, then the sports such as automobile, I know archery had it on it for as well, that they can do it themselves in terms of a safety issue. And that's what they're doing now. And that's the reason it's come off the list.
No, it really does make some sense for some of those sporting organizations around the world to govern themselves in terms of protecting their athletes and, I guess, promoting fair play within their sports. So handing the torch off makes a lot of sense to me. As your job is very big, WADA has a big job governing this thing globally. And I guess, you know, when we look at the Russian doping scandal and some of the high-profile athletes that have been caught recently, it kind of gives us an idea of what's going on out there. It is a big job, Rob. And in your opinion, just from where you are sitting right now, if we look at everything that's gone on, where are we at right now in the fight against drugs and upholding the idea of fair play and the integrity of sport?
No question. I mean, it's always been a battle. It's always been a tough road in front of us. But I think since WADA was created, there's been a lot in 1999, a lot of improvements. I mean, came into an area where we've invested more in research to ensure that we have the ability to detect emerging substances. We have agreements with the pharmaceutical companies to be able to get preclinical trials of substances so we can really work out ways of detecting substances. We brought in the athlete biological passport, which is the ability to really analyze athletes' blood samples over a period of time and to see if there's any change. Blood levels should maintain their consistency over time. And if there are discrepancies, we can either, one, move forward with an anti-doping rule violation or use that information to target test athletes. As with the Russian case, another element that is proving to be very successful is investigations. And that's where we utilize our Speak Up program to obtain information from whistleblowers, for people or athletes that want to come forward that have concerns. And we have an independent investigative team that really takes all of these and looks into them individually. And we've moved a lot of mountains in terms of what we've achieved in terms of investigations. And just recently, the IBU case, the International Biathlon Union, with its president and secretary general, was a case that was moved forward with WADA and potential corruption charges on anti-doping.
Well, I really do appreciate the investigative side. It's really brought in, some firepower to the argument for safety in sport and to get the evidence needed to, I guess, uphold and stand the scrutiny in the court of law is the big thing. And I consider, Rob, the Russian doping scandal and investigation there, that's a major, major coup for sport. I mean, it's unfortunate that it happened. Don't get me wrong. We never like to see it. But the fact that it went as far as it did and the stance it was taken, I thought it was a real major coup, a shot across the bow for anybody else out there thinking about something as crazy as that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. And you know, there's a lot of misinformation out there, too, when you hear what the report happened and some people questioning the report. But I think it's really important to underline that just prior to the Rio Olympic Games, when the IAAF had banned the Russian athletics from the Rio Olympics, as well as the International Paralympic Committee, that there was challenges in the Court of Arbitration of Sport, challenges in the Swiss Federal Court, and challenges in German courts, all of which overturned or withheld the McLaren report to show that there was institutionalized doping in Russia. So the report stands strong. We're still moving forward with cases. It's not over. And we're still pressing forward with ensuring that the athletes' rights are protected and those athletes that have lost medals because of others have cheated, that there's retribution for them.
Yeah, so, so important. It's such an important part of sport right now, sending this clear message. You mentioned the biological passport system. And the minute I heard about this years and years ago, I was a big, big fan. This has to be one of the strongest tools, I think, Rob, in terms of the fight against drugs and I guess maybe regulating it more so. How is that going? I know the costs were a big issue to start with, but I really think this could be one of the major tools moving forward.
Yeah, I think, as I said before, that it's important to have the multi-pronged approach, and the passport, the athlete biologic passport, brings one of those. Costs have come down, obviously, in terms of analysis. It's not that expensive to analyze for the passport itself. The cost comes when it comes to shipping the blood, because it has to be in certain criteria and temperature when shipping it and receives it at the laboratory within a 48-hour period of time. So. We're seeing more and more organizations implementing it, and it's becoming mandatory for all organizations in 2019 to have a mandatory athlete biological passport program and to collect blood and urine.
Yeah, it's a great program. We're talking with Rob Keeler, the Deputy Director General for the World Anti-Doping Agency. Rob, the supplement industry. I know this is a very gray, dark area. It's maybe one of the most, in my opinion, one of the most dangerous, unregulated industries on the planet right now. It's a big issue for athletes. And I know that WADA stance is just sort of, hey, be responsible. Know what's on the banned substance list and know what you're putting in your body. Has there been any moves, Rob, in terms of WADA sort of maybe supporting some sort of regulatory guidelines in the supplement world? Because it's here. It's a $1 billion business. It's not going anywhere. And yet it's such a touchy, scary area for athletes.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's over a $93 billion industry. We've held conferences in the past to try to get the industry itself to regulate, to be more responsible when it comes to the nutritional supplements. But the reality is there's no real strong interest in doing that. The supplement industry, generally speaking, we tell athletes if it says it has muscle building, if it says it increases endurance, it's more likely to contain prohibited substance. I mean, these organizations or these companies, they're not required to list the entire ingredient list on the packaging. Normally 20% of the supplements that are not labeled usually contain prohibited substances. So we're left in a very gray area for athletes and to guide them. And that's where we really like to separate the two areas. One is vitamins and one is supplements. We know that some athletes or even people in general have vitamin deficiencies, which you normally have pretty safe ability to take vitamins, whether it's a vitamin D or a vitamin A. But when it comes to the supplement industry, they're really interested in making money. They're not interested in the health of people. And that's the end goal. When it comes to athletes, we really strongly encourage them to seek advice from nutritionists, to talk to them, especially kids now. If you look at minor hockey and kids coming home thinking they need to have creatine and supplement their diet, at that age, a balanced diet can fulfill all those obligations for athletes. So that's where we try to push them in that direction, because you simply cannot give a seal of approval to say this is okay, because every runoff of the supplements is different. And it's a very difficult area to navigate. But in the end, we have to make sure that the athletes understand they have strict liability. If it's in their system, they're responsible for it. It's difficult, but it's the way we are right now with the supplements.
Yeah, and that's a fair shot across the bow for everybody, because you're right. We're seeing athletes younger and younger getting into the protein powders and the creatine, and it's a dangerous game to play because we really don't know what's in those products. I agree. Consult with some people in the know, in the industry. There are some reputable companies out there that put out good products, so that's a fair shot across the bow. Getting back to the marijuana legalization and the CBD oil, Rob, last question here. Do you guys have any concerns about the crossover of maybe impurity like THC for athletes? Is there maybe a warning you'd like to put out in advance? And as you mentioned, some countries are dealing with this already. Is there anything that you've seen that would maybe help athletes make the right decision, or again with the CBD oil, to make sure it's pure and actually doesn't contain a banned substance?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had anything as of yet. The one of the strengths we have within WADA is that we have a pretty strong athlete committee, where their voice is an independent one. And we meet with them two times a year and have two teleconferences a year and really take anything they have in terms of concerns, whether things are emerging or they think need to be addressed to further educate athletes. We deal with them on an ongoing basis. And through this process, when something comes on the list or comes off the list, they have concerns, then we definitely take them seriously and try to develop a communication strategy so it's clear for all athletes and sport personnel on what we're doing on the way forward.
Great, Rob. Well, listen, we appreciate you and all the work the good people at the World Anti-Doping Agency are doing every single day to level the playing field out there in the name of sport integrity. So I appreciate your time today and all your great comments.
Thanks, Jeff. It was a pleasure to be with you today.
And there you have it, a great conversation with the Deputy Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency. Listen, there's still some conversation to be had around CBD oil and its use and its safety inside of sport. Let's get out for a quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss that and we'll wrap up the show right after this. Stick around, everybody.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. We are your weekly source for performance information. CrushPerformance.com is the website, at Jeff Crush on Twitter, and Crush Performance on Instagram, on Facebook, and on YouTube as well. And today we're going back into the Crush mailbag to answer some questions that have come up over the last few weeks. And we just got off a great conversation with Rob Keeler, the Deputy Director General from WADA. That whole segment came from some questions that came in regarding our episode, Drunken Stone, the impact and effects of alcohol and drugs on performance and development. In that episode, we talked about CBD oil and its implications in terms of health and wellness. There are some strong, strong indicators that it is potentially very helpful and very useful in terms of health and even for medical reasons, hence the whole medical marijuana industry. But also the fact that CBD oil is off the banned substance list as of 2018 for the World Anti-Doping Agency. And it's raised a lot of questions. And I think we just had a lot of those questions answered by Rob. Fantastic stuff there. We have to thank him for coming on the show. But today, that's what the show is all about. We're getting back to some of the questions. And listen, we still haven't cleared the air on CBD oil. There's a lot of unanswered questions, not just revolving around the legalization. We're going to have to be heads up here, ladies and gentlemen, because there's a lot of things that I think beyond just the business side of this, we're going to have to deal with. And educating our young people is going to be a big part of it. Sport could be a really, really big tool here.
But in terms of our athletes using CBD oil and what it's going to be used for, there's a lot of implications here for maybe improving health, maybe even influencing recovery and performance, but there's a lot of gray areas as well. It's going to be a big business. There's more than a dozen countries that have CBD-based medications on the market, but the research revolving around this is still very, very young. It's reported that hemp CBD generated over $170 million in 2016, and by 2020, it's going to be a multi-billion dollar industry, and the numbers are still rough, but they're gauging it to grow by 55% every single year. Again, big business. And whenever there's big business, we have to be careful because people rush to get to the end before we really do it right. There's a lot of questions that I still have, and I think that we should all have, revolving around CBD oil. We don't really know what the dosages are for certain ailments. We don't know really what the impact is on inflammation compared to things like ibuprofen. Is it better for you? Is it more effective? Who should use it? Who shouldn't? How much should you use? Right now, there are about 20 clinical trials going on trying to answer these questions. We don't have those answers yet, but until we start getting those answers, we're going to have to be careful. One clinical trial that's really interesting to me is a $16 million effort by the University of Miami looking into CBD's effects on brain trauma in the workplace, car accidents, workplace injuries, but also in sport. Could there be implications? Well, we know early on here that CBD oil has potentially neural implications. It can influence, maybe even perhaps protect the nervous system by early indications here. So I really like this effort by the University of Miami looking into the impact or maybe potential influence on brain trauma. That's going to be a good one to watch. We'll keep you posted on that one. I'm watching it closely, and we're actually reaching out to the researchers to really understand what they're looking at and what they've found so far. So there's a lot of implications here. But besides the potential, there are also major, major concerns. As we mentioned in the supplement industry, it's no different with CBD oil. And as a matter of fact, it's exactly the same. We don't really have an understanding of the quality of the products being sold. And even though in the US, marijuana has been legalized in certain states for some time, there's no regulations by the US FDA in terms of CBD oil. And we're not sure what the guidelines the Canadian government are going to put into place as it becomes legalized and enters the marketplace. And to give you an example of some of the concerns, in a 2017 study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, they stated that 69% of CBD products tested didn't contain the amount listed on the label. Some had none, for crying out loud, and others contained THC, which would be an absolute disaster for any athlete who takes this for its proposed anti-inflammatory or pain relief properties, because THC and pot are still banned in sport. So if we get this cross-contamination or a CBD oil that's not purified, you're in big trouble. And there's no regulations here. We also have to be careful of false claims and extravagant claims, unproven claims. If a company can't justify or show science supporting their claims that they're making, walk away, ladies and gentlemen. And of course, then there's the issue of crossing the border in the U.S. state by state, but certainly from Canada to the U.S. It's not like you can walk across the border with this stuff. So we have to proceed with caution. There's still a lot of questions here. And I have a lot of concerns for my athletes, especially as legalization is right upon us across Canada. It's expanding in the U.S. and around the world. And we still have all of these unanswered questions. So proceed with caution for now. Take your time. Let's just sit back, watch it unravel, and stay smart when it comes to this stuff. For sure, I want to thank everybody for those questions. And again, more questions. We have more questions. We answer a few, we get 10 more. Answer one, get 10 more. And that's the process. And I think that's how this whole thing's going to unravel. It's just going to take a little bit of time for us to get a handle on it all. But it'll work out in the end. There's no doubt about it. And potentially, hey, some exciting possibilities from the medical side and even from the sports side. So let's keep our eye on that, and we will keep you posted. So with all that said, I want to get back to the Crush mailbag and get to the last group of questions that we've had come to us over the last little while. And these questions are coming not from the radio show, believe it or not. They're coming from a presentation that I did out in Mission, out on the West Coast, to their sport council. Their sport leaders were there, coaches, parents were there, some athletes were there as well. It was fantastic. And again, I have to apologize one more time, and I will apologize again. It was supposed to be a 90-minute presentation talking about the keys to success in sports, looking at developmental models, winning cultures, supporting development, and some big picture stuff as well. It's supposed to be a 90-minute presentation. It went to 3 hours, and we could have gone longer. We had to call it at 3 hours because the kids had to go to bed and people had to work the next day. But it was fantastic. But this last group of questions are actually from people who attended that presentation. And I want to thank everybody for reaching out. But there's some really good questions here. And the great thing about getting questions from these presentations and talks that we do around the world or from the radio show is it gets us thinking about what everybody's thinking about. And I can't tell you how much we appreciate every single note that we get and comment that we get. And even the smart remarks, trust me, a lot of them are good. Some of them are brutal, but a lot of them are good and they get us thinking. And some of them get us laughing. But these questions were great. The whole presentation there was revolving around what are the keys to success in our sporting model, in the developmental world? What do we need to do from the grassroots right up? Well, one of the things we have to keep in mind is why kids play. And we brought back a great conversation we had a few weeks ago regarding why kids play sport with Amanda Visick and her great, great research on fun maps and the number of reasons that kids play sport. Well, if we look at that research, and we look at why kids play sport, we know that winning isn't even in the top 10 reasons they play. As a matter of fact, in the 81 reasons that Amanda Visick and her group found to be the top reasons that kids play sport, and they went down to 81 of them, winning was number 48. What do you think number one was? Of course, to have fun. Number two, to do something I'm good at and to improve my skills was number three. To stay in shape was number four. To get exercise, winning was number 48 on the big list. So when it comes to putting together a developmental program from the grassroots up, what are the priorities? Well, the priorities are getting our kids involved, helping them stay in shape, teaching them new things, exposing them to maybe sports and activities they've never seen before. So as they age and get older, they can start honing in and finding things that they're actually good at, both mentally and physically, because those two things have to match up. I mean, take for example, think about your sporting career, whether you were an athlete or not. Think about maybe the activity that you got involved in. Maybe it was band, or maybe it was art, or maybe it was acting. If we look at our athletes, or if I look back on my sporting career, I was really a team guy. I don't really think I got into the individual sports because it wasn't social enough for me. I really loved the camaraderie and the team sports, but I have worked with world-class golfers, tennis players, world-class squash guys, and squash guys that have come from hockey backgrounds and come from really diverse sort of really good sampling backgrounds where they played a number of different sports and wound up playing, you know, these individual sports. And I always ask them, you know, why did you go to an individual sport? And I remember one of our squash players who was world renowned, working and just moving up, flying up the world rankings. He said, I don't like it when my results depend on somebody else's performance. Think about that for a second. That has nothing to do with, you know, the camaraderie or anything. He just didn't want to have to rely on everybody else. He wanted to take full responsibility. So think of all those golfers, tennis players, all those people that participate in individual sports. Think of the mentality there. And then swimming would be another one. And then think of the team sports and everybody who plays team sports and why they play. Very different reasons, but also very, very different personalities. The people who play team sports, they like the camaraderie, they like the teamwork, they like working together to accomplish things, they like being part of something bigger than themselves. And while in the individual sports, there's still a team around those athletes, when it comes to performing, it's all on them. And I think, you know what, I've got a big background in baseball. I think that's one of the things that makes baseball intriguing to so many players, because it's a team sport, but it's also, at some point in time, an incredible individual challenge as well, whether you're a pitcher, whether you're a hitter, or whether you're fielding the ball in the field, or whether you're running the bases. There's an individual skill set there that makes baseball so, so hard. But if our kids never get to sample all of these different sports, how are they going to know what they're good at and also what they want to pursue? It's one of the drastic downfalls of early specialization. And I'm telling you right now, specializing before the age of 10, that means focusing in and only playing one sport before the age of 10 is dangerous, risky business. Listen to me. It really, really limits the development of an athlete. And even if you pursue that particular sport, it can really lower the ceiling of potential. And we've seen that in numerous studies where kids have specialized early in one sport. And it makes some sense, right? It makes some sense to dive in and specialize in one sport. You would think that if you get really good at something, you'd have a chance to succeed. Well, studies have time and time again shown that these kids, once they've gone through the system, have a very low ceiling of potential. They can get to a good college level, maybe even a national team level. That's very limited with specialized athletes. But beyond that, multi-sport athletes. Athletes who played multiple sports through those developmental years, which can go right up to age 14, 15, and 16, predominantly rule the higher levels of sport performance. So parents, coaches, people who are running training centers out there, where it's baseball or soccer or basketball all year round, please rethink your strategies. Specialization is here to stay. But we've got to make sure we start making adjustments. And the reason it's here to stay, it goes back to that Time article that I mentioned earlier, how kids' sports became a $15 billion industry. That's the single reason why we can't go back. There's too much money being made now. And in order to legislate something to overcome that, I just don't see how it's possible. So for people who are running those programs, and if you're a parent or coach who has players in those year-round programs, where it's indoor, outdoor, summer, winter, you had better make sure that the experiences those athletes get in those programs is diverse enough to maximize that ceiling of potential. When we start working with 10, 11, 12-year-olds, I'm already thinking 23, 24, 25 years. And what I mean by that, I'm thinking about what are they going to look like 10 years down the road? Because if we don't do the right things when they're 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, we're really lowering their ceiling of potential when they get to the point where, hey, they might have a chance to go on and do something special if they choose. Now, understand this. As a closing comment for the show, we're virtually out of time here. The number one priority for any developmental sporting system should be to keep kids involved and make sure they're having fun. The high performance will just be a beautiful offshoot of a good, good system. And those are the real hurdles we're facing in the developmental sport model. I want to thank everybody from Mission for having me out. It was a great conversation. We need to do it more often in virtually every community where they're playing sports to get us all thinking and maybe recalibrating what we're doing. And I want to thank Rob Keeler, the Deputy Director General for the World Anti-Doping Agency, for joining us today. And I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Keep those questions coming and keep that mailbag humming along, everybody. We love the comments. We love the questions. And we'll talk to you next week on Crush Performance.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to ride.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Please welcome back to City Ringside, legendary Hall of Famer, J.J. Dillon.
And I don't know if it was TV or if it was just like a live event like the Garden or somewhere. And The Rock was there. And he said to me, pulled me off to the side, and he said, I know you go back to my father and my grandfather, so I know that I can kind of open up and be myself and speak honestly with you. And I also know that, you know, you have some influence. You're part of the hierarchy. Can you make some phone calls and help get me out of here? I'm that unhappy.
Oh, my God.
And he said, well, all my time in the business, from the time that I got out of college, and the one thing that I always had was I always had money in my pocket. And that made me feel secure at that moment. And he said, right now, I don't have $2 to rub against each other in my pocket. Can you get me out of here? I said, okay. What I can tell you is that at this particular moment, you can't begin to imagine what lays in front of you in terms of success and financial rewards. And for you to have a momentary moment where it hasn't happened yet, and because you don't have $2 in your pocket, this is your lowest low. Give me 5 minutes. Put it on hold. I came back in 5 minutes. I said, give me your hand. And I took a wad of maybe $300, $500. I don't remember what the exact. And I said, now close your hand around that. Now put your hand in your pocket. Tell me you feel a little different. And he started to smile and he said, yeah, I don't have to worry about how I'm going to pay for my room or my car payment. And he said, that's why you are where you are in this business, because you've experienced all this yourself. And you understand better than anybody else that's here what my mindset was. And in that moment, just putting some cash in his hand and in his pocket changed his whole mental attitude. And he was okay. And that bought some time for him to see the road to success start to unfold in front of him.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.